Heyo, and here we go. Welcome to another edition of We Talk Music. I am Mr. Brett Podcast. I am one half of your metal nerds and the chief defender of the faith. And I am happy to be joined today by an extra special guest, the lead singer of Flotsam and Jetsam. He is Eric A.K. Eric, how are you today?
I'm doing pretty good. Weather's amazing here in Arizona, so I'm having a good time.
Ah, well, it's less amazing here in Calgary, so I wish I was with you in Arizona. But that's okay. It's the price we pay for where we live.
That's right.
All right. Well, we are talking today because we're here to talk about the End of Chaos, Flotsam and Jetsam's new album, which is due out in the middle of January. I think the 18th, I believe.
Yes.
Excellent.
I can't wait.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I've had a chance to hear the album early, and I got to tell you, it's really, really good. I really like it. It stands up to some of your best work. So I think that, I mean, you guys just seem to be getting stronger right now. And the addition of Ken Mary on drums is absolutely amazing. He's just, pounds those things.
Yeah, Ken was a good find for sure.
Yeah, no question. I mean, I've followed Ken's career for a long time, so it's nice to see him. It's nice to see it, because this is quite different, it seems, from some of the earlier work that I've heard him play on. So, you know, just kind of allow him to unleash him a little bit.
You know, I think he really wanted the challenge. I mean, it's a little harder, faster, heavier stuff than he's used to playing. And I think he was really looking forward to the challenge of playing the new Flotsam stuff. So he sure stepped up and did his part on it, that's for sure.
All right. Well, let's talk about the End of Chaos then, and just, you know, how did the album come about? What are the things that you're most excited for fans to hear from the new album?
Ooh, wow. You know, the two guitar players wrote a boatload of songs for me to put my little imprint on, and every one of them was super exciting, and it was really difficult to put it down to just one album's worth of music. So I'm really excited for everybody to hear all of it, basically. I had like 42 songs or something like that to choose from.
Wow.
And they went hog wild on the writing on this one. And, you know, none of them were really better or worse than any other one. So I just started working on them, and the first 12, 14 songs we got done, we concentrated on those. So we've got, you know, another album's worth of stuff ready to go.
Yeah, that's great. Like, will you take those songs automatically towards the new album? I would assume there'd be more new writing anyways, because, I mean, I guess you must kind of build up a lot of songs overall, especially over the length of time that you guys have been together.
We don't really take a song that we've written for one session and give it to another one. We may steal parts out of those songs, but we'll pretty much write everything fresh for the next one too. So
yeah. So now your last album was in 2016. And now you've got the new album coming out, I guess, early 2019. You know, you've been, ever since 2010, you've actually been pretty consistent with your album releases. Do you see that kind of thing carrying on for you?
I think it just takes us a couple of years to write a record. You know, if it took us a month, we'd probably put one out every month. But, we like to put a record out, and then we like to go see the world with that record and see the fans' faces and see how they like the new stuff. And then we come home and relax a little bit and start all over again. So it's kind of a routine for us now, and we're touring more than we ever have, and we're writing more than we ever have. So it's becoming part of my daily routine that every couple of years we put out another record.
So then you're on AFM label right now, and you've been with them for the last two albums. So how are they working out for you in that regard?
You know, they're really big Flotsam fans, everybody at the label, and they treat us well, and they try their hardest, and they may not be, you know, one of the bigger labels or one of the most powerful labels, but they sure believe in us, and we believe in them, and it's working out really well for both sides right now.
Yeah, because, I mean, you've been, my Lord, I mean, when I think about it, you're nearing 40 years with Flotsam and Jetsam. So, I mean, you must have seen pretty much everything in that time, I would think. So tell me about some of the record labels that you've been on and some of that process of like finding a record label for yourselves now.
You know, we've spent everything from $1,000 to $1 million on records. And, it's quite a different thing depending on what size of a label you're on. But, you know, our goals are a little different now and our expectations are a little different. So, you know, a smaller label that it really believes in us is, really kind of where we want to be. When we started off on Metal Blade, they had already had some good names on there, of course, because they started everybody on the planet pretty much.
Yeah, that's right.
And when we got signed to Elektra, they basically wanted to corner the metal market. You know, they had Metallica, and they had a bunch of really cool bands and they were like, we're going to be the metal label of the world. And I don't know what really happened, but we ended up on MCA from there, and they wanted us to be their Metallica. They were grooming us to be their big, you know, huge metal band. And then they got bought by some corporation, and the corporation went through their list of bands and just went, oh, I like these guys. No, I never heard of them. Get rid of them. I like these guys. I've never, you know. And we were one of the bands they had never heard of, even though we were being groomed to be the next big thing. And I think it was Seagram's or somebody that bought them. And they just kind of went, you know what? I've never heard of them. Get rid of them. And that was the end of our big, huge label career. So we went back to independent labels after that, and we've been really kind of comfortable and down to earth since then.
Yeah, I suppose you really have to kind of develop a down to earth attitude after a while in the music industry, because there's just, you know, so much goes on and, you know, I mean, you just never know, right? I mean, we've talked to so many people and
the industry's changed so much over the last few years. It's ridiculous. So, you know, you have to come down out of the clouds and decide that you're never going to be a Lamborghini driver and just hope you can make a living at it, you know? So that's kind of where we're at now. We're, you know, we're happy that we're making a living being a band and we don't really expect too much more than that.
Right. Yeah. Cause I mean, I remember when I first really started getting into you guys, it was back in 92 with the Quattro album. And I remember hearing that and just thinking, wow, this is really good, because one of the things that I appreciate about you guys is that you're not afraid of melody and throwing that kind of thing into the songs. Like, they could be really heavy, but you can feel that underlying melodic thrust.
You know, we're a heavy band because we like heavy bands and we like being a heavy band, but we really don't worry about that when we're writing songs. We don't think, you know, is this heavy enough? Is this grungy enough? Is this whatever? We just write, and whatever comes out. And, just, I think our love for metal and that aggression is why we come up with some heavy stuff once in a while.
Now, so tell me about singing the heavy stuff. I mean, were you kind of born to sing heavy? Was it, did you have to kind of learn how to maintain that, especially over such a lengthy career?
You know, when I joined Flotsam, they were actually called the Dogs then. And I had never heard metal before. I ran into Kelly Smith, and we were both ditching a class at summer school and went out in the parking lot to smoke a joint. And he's like, "Hey, you know anybody that can sing?" I'm like, "Sure, I can sing." And he gave me Unleashed in the East and the Number of the Beast album. He said, "Here, learn some of these songs." And I'm like, "What is this stuff?" You know, and I was hooked ever since then. So it's before joining the band, I was listening to Barry Manilow and singing show tunes and stuff. It was ridiculous.
I cannot imagine that, I'll be honest.
And nowadays, I can't imagine it either, but that's the way it was.
Although I'd love to hear lots of Jets from covering a Barry Manilow song. I think that would be excellent.
Yeah, that's probably not going to happen.
Sudden fan revolt. So then, what is one of your what are your favorite things about getting out on tour and being able to see the fans live?
You know, doing this for so long, I run into fans that I met and partied with, you know, decades ago, and we go out on tour now, and I run into those same fans, and it's like we never skipped a day. We just hang out on the bus and party and talk and, you know, have a good time. And hanging out with the fans, especially our hardcore Flotsam fans, is one of my favorite things about touring. Of course, seeing the world doesn't hurt either. So.
Yeah. So what then, when you're putting in songs for a set, what kind of makes the set? Like, what new, especially when you talk about new songs, are there like themes that you look for? Are you looking for things that are kind of going to be really, really heavy that will kind of drive the fans a little bit more? Or are you just looking for the songs that you kind of know are going to be right for the set?
I think everybody in the band looks for something different. I know I look for stuff that is really fun to sing, and Mike Gilbert shoots me down a lot because he says, "No, that song's going to bring the pace of the show down, so we got to oust that one." Or, you know, "This song is a hot dog song. It seems like we're trying to show off or something, so that one's out." So we kind of go through this process of elimination on the set list. There are some songs that we have to play. You know, if we don't play either Hammerhead or No Place, somebody's going to get angry at us. So there are some songs that have to be in the set. And that's all right with us. We like our older stuff. We like the first two records just as much as most other people do. So, and those songs are a lot of fun to play.
Mm-hmm. How many new songs from the End of Chaos will wind up in the tour?
You know, I think we're practicing like five songs, so probably three of them will end up on the set, three or four.
And then how is the reaction to the newer songs? Because, again, I mean, you guys have so many albums, so of course you would have seen new songs go onto a set list a lot in your day. How is the reaction generally from the fans?
You know, I worry about that. I worry about that we're going to lose somebody when we start playing songs that they don't know. But then, you know, we did some stuff off the last record on tour, and I'm looking out in the crowd and everybody's singing it with me. So, you know, I kind of quit worrying about that stuff. We can tell which songs people like the most off the new stuff. And we usually throw those into the set. And almost every time I've got half the crowd singing the words with me. So it's kind of nice.
So you've got I know you've got a music video out for Demolition Man.
Yes.
It's a very interesting music video. Like, I got to say, it's nice because it's kind of cool to see a story music video. I feel like we don't see story music videos enough nowadays.
Yeah, everybody wants to look like a cool live band, and they don't really care about, you know, the artistry end of it.
Yeah, so what prompted the making of the video like this then?
You know, the guy who did our last video, he did a great job. He was really fun to work with. And he kind of, we were looking through producers for the new video, and he wrote us a letter and just said, hey, you know, we had a great time last time, and you guys just kind of let me run with it. How about just letting me run with this one? No questions asked. And we were like, all right, why not? So the producer pretty much wrote that whole storyline and basically filmed everything and got it all done without even talking to us about it. And once it was finished, we were just like, this is great. Put it out.
Nice. Yeah, it's so very interesting. I'm always fascinated to watch the new music videos that come out, because I mean, life is so much different now than from the MTV era where everybody and their donkey could have like 6 music videos per album. So I mean, you probably have to be a little more careful of how many videos you're releasing.
Yeah, and you know, we're not on one of those super King Kong labels that can afford a video for every song either. So we got to be a little bit picky on which songs we're going to do. And in this case, we pretty much let the label pick the song. They're paying for the video, and we trust their judgment. So they picked that song, and it's one of the ones we had picked anyway.
Nice. Do you think that, how many videos do you think they'll want to do? Do you know?
I know we're going to do at least one more and a couple lyric videos.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's another interesting thing, the lyric videos. I don't know, how well do lyric videos typically do? Is that just to kind of get the song out there for people to hear a little bit more?
It is kind of, it's they're made to be kind of like a teaser to put out before the record comes out. Although I was just at a nightclub in downtown Phoenix the other night, and they had one of our lyric videos up on the big monitor, and they said it's on normal rotation. So, and there were several other lyric videos from other bands on there. So I think that's one of the things they use it for too, is for the, you know, the live club type stuff.
Do you have a lot of clubs in Phoenix that that will play heavier music and stuff like that?
You know, we've got a few live venues that are pretty good here, but I don't know about a lot. There's maybe 5 or 6 decent ones. And, you know, every local metal band plays them every night, basically. So, yeah, they all play, you know, videos from whoever. And most of the clubs around here are pretty big Flotsam fans.
Is there a decent metal scene in Phoenix? Because I've never been, so I, you know, it very much interests me as to what the different metal scenes are like in various cities.
You know, it's just like anywhere else. Basically, there are a lot of bands here, but you go to a club and watch a night of, you know, 7 or 8 bands, and one of them's really good.
Yeah. Now, when you're out touring and stuff like that, what are some of the most important things that you're looking for, like in a venue or in just the show in general?
You know, shows are always, of course, best when you sell them out or at least pack them in. But the venues that are laid back, not uptight, they're not all strict about everything. The ones that are just there to make some money, have a good time, you know, nobody gets hurt, nobody gets angry, everybody has a great night. Those are the kind of venues that we like the most. You know, the ones where you can go up and talk to the bartender all day and then talk to them all night because they are just cool people. We've run into so many where the bar owner is uptight and the security think that they're, you know, the today's army, and the bartenders are all snooty and they won't talk to you. And, you know, that makes it uncomfortable for everybody. And there's a lot of venues we play where everybody is just down to earth and happy to be there. And, you know, those are the nights that you remember.
So in doing this for so long, like, what are some of the craziest moments that you've ever had being out on tour?
Oh, Oh, wow. All right, here's one. This is one of my favorite ones.
Excellent.
I'm at the Columbia Hotel in London on my birthday. I think it's like 1997, 98, something like that. 4 o'clock in the morning, and Dave Mustaine and I break into the pub in the lobby because it was closed. And we're both just hammered off our asses. But it's my birthday, 4 o'clock in the morning, and I'm having cornflakes. We didn't have any milk, so we used cognac. So we were having cornflakes with cognac at 4 a.m, just me and Dave Mustaine just sitting there, you know, shooting the breeze for hours and hours. It was awesome. That's one of my favorite memories of being on tour.
Wow, that is great stuff. So who are some of those other people that you've toured with that you just find like really cool and you really enjoy spending the time with?
One of my favorite tours was the King Diamond Them tour.
Oh, yeah.
With Andy LaRoe and Pete Black, and that was with Mickey D playing on drums, and that was one of the funnest tours I've ever been on. It was drunken debauchery night every night, you know. It was just ridiculous. And that's one I can't remember and won't ever forget at the same time. So
yeah. I mean, are they the same kind of thing now when you go on tour? Is it still drunken debauchery, or is it a little more toned down?
You pretty much have to be toned down. You know, it used to be you play for 3 nights and you take a couple nights off, and then you play for another 3-4 nights. Now our last tour was 40 shows in 43 days. So if you're doing those kind of every night things, you really can't whoop it up every night. You'll be dead before the end of the tour. So you really kind of got to pull the brakes once in a while and slow down. And, you know, we have our moments once in a while when we're breaking a window on a bus or something, but it's not, it's nothing near what it used to be.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I know the tours themselves, they're just so, so different. Then when you are out on tour, in 2019, what does the tour look like there?
Let's see, in March, I think we have like 3 weeks with Overkill and Destruction in Europe. And then we come back and do 6 weeks headlining in the U.S. and Canada. And then we go back over to Europe for most of the summer festivals. So we're pretty busy.
Yeah, for sure. So tell me about the festivals. How cool is it to play those?
It's pretty cool to play most of them. There's a few festivals that are a little too big for themselves, and they don't really care who's playing because they're going to sell out anyway.
Mm.
And those festivals, you kind of feel like, you know, like cattle in a corral. They just kind of move you along and, okay, go do this, go do that. But there's some really good festivals out there that you still get the star treatment, and you know, people are happy to see you and they're glad you're there. And those are the fun ones and the ones we hang out at.
Now, I mean, for, you know, you and Micah and the two Michaels, you guys have been together for quite a long time. What do you attribute that longevity?
I think we're all crazy. you know, Michael Gilbert and I have been through a lot together over the last 35 years. Of course, Michael Spencer was the first one to replace Newstead when he left. So it's kind of crazy that we've known each other for so long and we're still doing this. But for some reason, we get along well enough and don't kill each other on tour. So it's, you know, we're going to keep riding it and not really ask too many questions about it.
Yeah, I suppose that's the best way to go. Just keep on trucking.
You know, it helps when the guys in the band are pretty much your best friends too. So,
yeah, I mean, it's so crazy because I know we hear so many stories about people who they wind up being in bands and ultimately they just can't stand the other people that are in the band with them, but it makes them money, so they go out on tour and keep recording albums. But so it's nice to hear stories about a band that actually kind of likes each other, you know?
Yeah, we do have our moments once in a while where, you know, we're just like, oh, I can't stand this guy. I'm going to punch him in the face. But it lasts for about an hour, and then we're friends again. So, one of the weird things is, you know, back in the day, we fired Michael Spencer, and when I kind of got the originals back together, well, nobody could remember why or what the situation was. And now he's been back in the band for a few years, and we still don't remember why or what the situation was. So it's kind of like, well, you know, we wasted all these years without you. What's going on? But he's a monster bass player and a great business guy for the band. So we're really lucky to have him.
Yeah. So do you take care of most of your own business then?
Yeah. You know, Spencer's really smart when it comes to the business end of things, and he doesn't do any decisions on his own. He makes sure he lets everybody know what's going on, and he doesn't just, you know, there's no I'm the boss and you guys do what I tell you thing going on here, which we've had before in the past with some managers and stuff. And the reason why we let Spencer do all the business is because he's good at it. You know, he's raised a couple of businesses from the ground up, and he did very well with them. So he really loves the band. He loves touring. He loves recording. He's a phenomenal bass player. So it works out well for all of us.
Does everybody have like a little bit of do they bring something different to the band personality wise?
Yeah. We're all very different people, which is strange because we all really like each other. So I wasn't sure I was going to like Ken Mary, but after doing a few tours with him, he's one of my favorite people. He's very funny. He's got a bunch of weird, goofy quirks that I like. And, it's just strange when you meet somebody and you're like, oh, I'm not going to like this guy. And then, you know, couple of years later, you're like, wow, this is one of my favorite people now.
So when you say that you weren't sure if you were going to like him, I'm interested because, like, how did he join the band then? And, like, and how is it that you could be like, I don't know if I'll like this guy. But, yeah, you join the band anyways.
You know, he's got a rather successful studio here in town. He does a lot of stuff there. A lot of weird stuff, you know, not really bands, but he does a lot of, soundtracks for animated movies and stuff like that. And he's pretty successful at it. And Steve Conley was, engineering for him and doing some producing for him. So they've been friends for a long time. And, when Jason left the band, he just said, well, you know what? I talked to Ken and he's like, it's not really the kind of stuff I've been doing, but I'm really up for the challenge. And he stepped in and showed us that he can play anything.
Yeah. Yeah. I was amazed, like totally blown away with his playing. I thought it was just excellent.
Yeah. He's gone from, you know, listening to the other stuff he's done. I mean, the heaviest thing he's done basically was what Alice Cooper, four Alice Cooper records he was on.
Yeah.
But, you know, the Fifth Angel and House of Lords, those aren't really heavy, even though they've got great drum stuff on them. So I was a little worried about, will he be able to keep up? You know, does he have the chops? And he just blows through this stuff like he's asleep. You know, it's ridiculous the way this guy plays.
Yeah, I mean, I love the fact that you can take somebody who hasn't been there and put them in the situation and he just flourishes. And so I think that's really great.
He really wanted the challenge. He liked how fast and heavy our stuff was. And he's like, you know, I'm so sick of playing slow drum stuff. I really want the challenge. And once he started playing with us, he was just like, oh yeah, this is fun. You know,
that's cool. So I'm interested because you have that that like 1 year where you're not in the band. What brought that about?
I was really sick of putting out records and going out on tour, and not, you know, I'd have to come home and get a job and to keep myself alive, and I just got really sick of it. I felt like I felt kind of unappreciated in the business or something. But you know, things happen. You get your dick knocked in the dirt a couple times, and you come back down to earth. And it was really the fans who went to see Flotsam with somebody else singing who got a hold of me and just said, "Man, you got to come back. What are you doing?"
Now, are you able now to is Flotsam like your full-time job at this point?
Pretty much. I mean, I own a couple little businesses in town that kind of keep me rolling, but you know, as long as we're on the road, I'm at least making enough to pay my bills and keep my family alive. So
yeah. What does, so after the show, like what does the merch table look like for Flotsam and Jetsam? Do you guys go out and sign after each show?
We do. We also hang out, you know, out by the bus or in the parking lot or whatever. We want everybody to come up and say hi and get their stuff signed, or, you know, just tell us how stupid we are or whatever. You know, that's part of the fun of touring, and it's part of the business.
What is the hallmark of a good Flotsam and Jetsam show? Like just going out there and just, you know, pushing it to the limit and just kinda going as crazy as possible?
You know, we seem to be one of those bands that just comes across well live. I've seen other bands like that where you're just like, okay, I'm waiting for these guys to at least play their hit, or, you know, please at least play the song that I know. And the whole show, you're engulfed into what they're doing. And, you know, for some reason, we're one of those bands that people leave the show going, wow, that whole thing was cool. So you know, we really like that aspect of it, and that's one of the things that keeps us going.
Yeah, I'm always intrigued because you know, sometimes when you see a band and you think like, oh, this is going to be great, and then it's really only the hits that you're interested in, because it's almost like they're not giving, you know, full, like, yeah, they're doing their hits, but the rest of the songs maybe they're just kind of pushing through because they have to. But yeah, it's great when you can hear a band and it doesn't matter what they're singing. Like maybe you know the hits, but no matter what they're singing, you're just completely in that show and in that moment with them.
Yeah. And I've seen some bands where, you know, I'm enjoying it just because of who they are. But if you close your eyes and listen, you're just like, oh, I probably wouldn't pay to go see these guys.
Yeah, that would be very unfortunate to like, I guess when you think about it. Now, how about, are you guys planning on another live album at all? Or a live album?
We've been thinking about that. We've got a couple festival shows that were filmed and recorded that really turned out nice. So we're thinking about doing that, but we've been so busy writing this record and doing videos and planning tours that we really haven't had time to go through them yet. But, you know, we've talked about it a few times. You know, I've got some ideas for a live record that I can't really talk to guys into yet. So we're still working on that. And we'll come up with something. We've been talking about maybe some kind of double live thing.
Oh, yeah, that would be very cool. Do you guys record shows on a regular basis? Like, we just talked to Blaze Bailey, and he records shows regularly on DVD, whether he releases them or not, just kind of records them. And then if he decides to release them, and he's kind of got them.
We don't do that consciously. We've had a few sound men that record every show just because. But we normally, when we go for a live recording, we wait for one of the festivals or one of the venues that we know does a great job at that. And we go from there. You know, like the Whiskey in Hollywood, they record there. They have everything running through Pro Tools, and it always ends up pretty good. So we usually look to them for some live recordings if we need them.
Oh, yeah, that's really interesting. So what's the biggest thing that you've learned for yourself over the time that you've been in the music industry? Like, how have you changed?
I think one of the biggest things I've learned is that you always change. I keep learning and trying new things and trying to be a better singer or a better front man. And, you know, the minute that you think, you know, I'm here, I'm the guy, then you're doing yourself in. So I always am constantly trying new things, learning how to use my throat different, watching other singers to see what they're doing. I'm constantly evolving. And I notice my guitar players all the time showing each other a new riff or a new scale that they've never heard of. If you do this scale, but don't use your pinky, that's the hardest thing on the planet. And that's all they do on the bus all day long, you know, is they're showing each other new stuff that they've seen on YouTube or whatever. And that's one of the cool things about this band, is they're constantly evolving and changing and learning.
Yeah, I think that's great. You know, I've talked to some guys and it's like they say that they don't really practice anymore because they know how to play the songs and they know, you know, what they have to do to perform. And so it's cool to hear about a band that, you know, is really still working at it and just finds it cool to be able to keep doing and to keep learning. I really appreciate that kind of sentiment.
Well, you know, as far as singing goes, I pretty much had to learn different ways of singing if I'm going to do 40 shows in a row without a night off, you know.
Yeah.
You can't really go balls out every night and survive a tour like that. So I had to learn of new ways to take care of my throat, new things to drink, new ways of warming up, all that. So I can go balls out every night and, you know, entertain the same every show. But it's, you know, it's constantly learning new stuff all the time in order to make it through.
Yeah, because as I was preparing to talk to you, I went back, you know, I listened to Quattro again and stuff like that, and I went back, and your voice still sounds, you know, so similar, and you know, it's like the fact that it. I mean, again, it's probably better even now almost. So, you know, I was kind of surprised about that in a way, I guess, how well you've held up over the years.
And really the only difference between singing now and singing back in the day is that back in the day I was pushing as hard as I can and straining as hard as I can. And now I sing the same basically, only it's much easier and smoother coming out now.
Yeah. Back to the End of Chaos for a moment. I would say that I think Recover is my favorite song from the album.
Nice.
But you know, I really like The End. I think that's a great song. One thing though that struck me about the album is the production. I think the production is great. You can hear all of the stuff. The bass tone really comes out nicely. So, you know, I just thought that it was a very well produced album.
You know, we basically everybody recorded their own parts at their own house. And then we had Jacob Hansen in Germany mix it for us, and he had never heard any of it. He had never talked to any of us. And that's kind of what we wanted. Somebody who was removed from the band and removed from the project to grab it at a raw stage and mix it. And he did a really good job.
Yeah, so is it kind of better for you guys to have somebody on the outside ready to give their feedback and ready to do their thing as opposed to trying to just do it yourself?
Yeah, we don't, you know, we do all the recording ourselves, and each person in the band puts their 2 cents worth on every track, basically. But when it comes to mixing, we all kind of want to hear something different. And we don't all have the same idea of what we want it to sound like. So it's better for us sometimes to get a removed party to put their spin on it. And it usually ends up that we all like it that way. So.
Yeah, I was interested in whether or not you kind of had, when you get it back, how many kind of rounds of changes do you make? Or is it kind of, is this album kind of finished as it came out from Jacob?
Oh, no, we send him probably 80 million emails saying, can you try this? Can you try that? Can we try this? And we end up going with what he originally sent us anyway. But, I need this one bass note turned up, or I need this one word I can't understand what I'm saying, or what. And by the time we're done confusing the hell out of a producer, we end up going with what they originally sent us back, because they really, you know, most good producers know better than we do anyway.
Well, that's fantastic. And, I thank you for your time. I think that the album is really good, and I hope it does super well for you. I'm hoping that, I can't remember if you guys came to Calgary and I missed you recently, or if you're coming to Calgary. I forget.
I know it's on the next tour in, April, something like that.
Yeah,
so, I don't remember if we were just there with Hammerfall or not. I think we were. We were just there with Hammerfall.
Yeah, it's funny because, I mean, it's not funny because it makes me sad. But I'm just getting into the, like, bands in town app, so I'm finally finding out about the bands that are coming, because people will tell me, like, oh, yeah, we were there, like, 2 years ago, and I'm like, what? What do you mean you were here 2 years ago? Where was I? How was I not there?
Oh, I've got friends in other bands that message me or email me and say, hey, why weren't you at the show last night? I'm like, what do you mean you were here? So, you know, I never know who's playing around any either, so.
Yeah, because you know, I would love to be able to see you guys. I've been following your career for a very long time, so it's about time, I say.
That's right, and it'll be a blast. It'll be a good time.
All right, well, Eric AK, this is the moment where I give you to plug all your stuff. Tell the fans where to find it.
You can find it anywhere. Just walk outside your door and look in the gutter. There's our latest record laying there. You can get order the new one all the regular places. Amazon, Spotify, all those. AFM Records is really the cheapest and best way to get it. We've got picture discs and all the new splatter discs and all that stuff going on. So there's a lot of collectible stuff you can get too.
Oh yeah. And
and we're going to be selling all that stuff out on the road with us too.
And the cover to the album is super cool.
Yeah. I can't wait to see. We got new backdrops being made. I can't wait to see them. I'm kind of excited.
Wow. Yeah. That's going to be great. Yeah. You guys have had a lot of different, like, there's no one kind of cover style for you guys. You're all over with the map when it comes to that.
Yeah, I've been wanting to bring Flotzilla back for a long time, and I could never talk the band into it. And this time I was just like, you know what? Flotzilla is going to be on the cover on this one. You guys just shut up. So they kind of married the idea and started coming up with their own versions of what Flotzilla was doing. So on this one, he's just torn apart New York City, and he's dragging the Statue of Liberty through the water, and he's got her torch in the other hand, and he's just an indestructible destruction force that we kind of made up and kind of suits the way our career is.
Well, I do love Flotzilla. I definitely want a shirt with Flotzilla on it.
Right. I've got some ideas for that, too.
That's wicked. Well, I truly look forward. I hope that I get a chance to see you guys live this coming tour. Otherwise, I am going to do it no matter how, no matter what it takes. I'm gonna go see you guys. The new album, The End of Chaos, is out January 18th, 2019. I do hope it sells super well for you and that the tour goes extraordinarily well. And I wish you all the best in the future, Eric, aka, thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, thank you very much. And when we do play near you, you better come out and have a drink with us or something.
All right, you know I will.